keys, and Josh drops them in my hand. Thanks, Joshy. I turn to leave, but he says, Wait, I'm worried about you. What? Why? He sighs heavily and adjusts his glasses. He only wears his glasses at night. This thing with Kavinsky. Not that again, Josh. He's a player. He's not good enough for you. You're... innocent. You're not like other girls. He's a typical guy. You can't trust him. I think I know him a lot better than you do. I'm just looking out for you. Josh clears his throat. You're like my little sister. I want to hit him for saying that. No, I'm not, I say. An uneasy look crosses over Josh's face. I know what he's thinking, because we're both thinking it. Then headlights are beaming down our street. It's Peter's car. He's come back. I hand Josh his set of keys and run over to my driveway. Over my shoulder, I call out, Thanks, Joshy! I come around the front to the driver's side. Peter's window is down. You forgot your bag, he says, glancing over toward Josh's house. I know, I say breathlessly. Thanks for coming back.
Is he out there?
I don't know. He was a minute ago.
Then just in case, Peter says,
and he leans his head out and kisses me on the lips, open-mouthed and sure. I'm stunned. When he pulls away, Peter's smiling.
Night, Lara Jean.
He drives off into the night, and I'm still standing there with my fingers to my lips. Peter Kavinsky just kissed me. He kissed me, and I liked it. I'm pretty sure I liked it. I'm pretty sure I like him. The next morning, I'm at my locker, putting my books away, when I see Peter walking down the hallway. My heart thumps in my chest so loud I can hear it echo in my ears. He hasn't seen me yet. I duck my head into my locker and start arranging my books into a pile. From behind the locker door, he says,
Hey.
Hey, I say back.
I just want to set your mind at ease, Covey. I'm not going to kiss you again, so don't worry about it.
Oh, so that's that. It doesn't matter if I like him or not, because he doesn't like me back. It's kind of silly to feel so disappointed about something you only just realized you wanted, isn't it? Don't let him see that you're disappointed. I face him. I wasn't worrying about it.
Yes, you were. Look at you. Your face is all pinched together like a clam.
Peter laughs, and I try to unpinch my face to look serene.
It's not going to happen again. It was all for Sanderson's benefit.
Good.
Good,
he says, and he takes my hand, and he closes my locker door, and he walks me to class like a real boyfriend. Like we're really in love. How was I supposed to know what's real and what's not? It feels like I'm the only one who doesn't know the difference. Chapter 50. My dad's thrilled when I ask him to sign the permission slip.
Oh, Lara Jean, this is great. Did Peter convince you? You've been scared of skiing ever since you were 10, and you did the splits and you couldn't get back up.
Yeah, I remember. My boots froze onto the skis, and I lay there in the splits for what felt like days. Signing the paper, my dad says,
Hey, maybe we can all of us go to Wintergreen over Christmas. Peter, too.
So that's where I get it from. My dad. He lives in a fantasy world. Handing me the slip, he says cheerfully,
You can wear Margot's ski pants, her gloves, too.
I don't tell him that I won't need them, because I'll be cozy in the lodge, reading and sipping hot cocoa by the fire. I should bring my knitting stuff with me, too. When I talk to Margot on the phone that night, I tell her I'm going on the ski trip, and she's surprised. But you hate skiing. I'm going to try out snowboarding. Just be careful, she says. I'm thinking she means on the slopes, but when Chris comes over the next night to borrow a dress, I learn otherwise.
You know everybody hooks up on the ski trip, right? It's like a school-sanctioned booty call.
What?
That's where I lost my V freshman year.
I
thought you lost it in the woods near your house.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. The point is, I had sex on the ski trip.
There are chaperones, I say worriedly. How can people just have sex with chaperones around?
Chaperones go to sleep early because they're old, Chris says. People just sneak out. Plus, there's a hot tub. Did you know that there's a hot tub?
No, Peter never mentioned that.
Well, that's that. I just won't pack a bathing suit. It's not like they can make you go in the hot tub if you don't want to. The year I went, people were skinny dipping.
My eyes bug out. Skinny dipping? People were nude?
Well, the girls took their tops off. Just be prepared.
Chris chews on her fingernail.
Last year, I heard Mr. Dunham got in the hot tub with students, and it was weird.
This sounds like the Wild West, I mutter.
More like girls gone wild.
It's not that I'm worried Peter will try something with me. I know he won't because he doesn't see me that way. But are people going to expect it? Am I going to have to sneak into his room in the middle of the night so people think we're doing something? I don't want to get in trouble on a school trip, but Peter has a way of convincing me to do stuff I don't want to do. I grab Chris's hands.
Will you please come? Please, please?
She shakes her head.
You know better than that. I don't do school trips.
You have before.
Yeah, freshman year. Not anymore.
But I need you. Desperately, I squeeze her hands and say, remember how I covered for you last year when you went to Coachella? I spent the whole weekend sneaking in and out of your house so your mom would think you were at home. Don't forget the things I've done for you, Chris. I need you now.
Unmoved, Chris plucks her hands away from mine and goes to the mirror and starts examining her skin. Kavinsky's not going to pressure you to have sex if you don't want to. If you minus the fact that he dated the devil, he's not a total dummy. He's kind of decent, actually.
What do you mean by decent? Decent, like he doesn't care that much about sex?
Oh, God, no. He and Jen were in constant heat for each other. She's been on the pill longer than I have. Too bad everyone in my family thinks she's this angel.
Chris pokes at a zit on her chin. What a fake. I should send an anonymous letter to our grandma.
Not that I really would. I'm no rat, unlike her.
Remember that time she told our grandma I was going to school drunk?
She doesn't wait for me to answer. When Chris gets going on a Genevieve rant, she is single-minded.
My grandma wanted to use the money she saved for my college for rehab. They had a family meeting about me.
I'm so glad you stole Kavinsky from her.
I didn't steal him. They were already broken up.
Chris snorts. Sure, keep telling that to yourself. Jen's going on the ski trip, you know. She's class president, so she's basically organizing it. So just beware. Don't ever ski alone.
I let out a gasp. Chris, I'm begging you, please come.
In a burst of inspiration, I say, if you come, it'll make Genevieve really mad. She's organizing this whole thing. It's her trip. She won't want you there.
Chris purses her lips into a smile. You know how to play me.
She juts her chin at me.
Do you think this zit is ready to pop?
Chapter 51. Thanksgiving Day, Daddy cleans out the turkey for me and then leaves to go pick up our Korean grandma, who lives an hour away in a retirement community with a lot of other Korean grandmas. Daddy's mom, Nana, is spending Thanksgiving with her boyfriend's family, which is fine by me because I know she wouldn't have anything nice to say about the food. I make up a green bean dish with orange peel and dill in an earnest effort to be jazzy and inventive. I nominate Kitty to be my taste tester, and she takes a bite of green bean and says it tastes like an orange pickle.
Why can't we just have the green bean casserole with the fried onion rings that come in the can? Kitty ponders. She's cutting out different colored feathers for her turkey placemats.
Because I'm trying to be jazzy and inventive, I say, dumping a can of gravy into the saucepan.
Doubtfully, Kitty says, "Well, are we still having broccoli casserole? People will eat that." "Do you see any broccoli anywhere in this kitchen?" I ask. "No, the green in this meal is the green bean." "What about mashed potatoes? We're still having mashed potatoes, right?"
Mashed potatoes. I jump up and check the pantry. I forgot to buy the potatoes. I got the whole milk and the butter and even the chives to put on top like Margot always does, but I forgot the actual potatoes. "Call Daddy and ask him to pick up Yukon Gold potatoes on the way home," I say, closing the pantry door. "I can't believe you forgot the potatoes," Kitty says with a shake of her head. I glare at her. "Just focus on your placemats." "No, because if I didn't just ask about the mashed potatoes, the meal would have been ruined. So you should be thanking me." Kitty gets up to call Daddy, and I yell out, "By the way, those turkeys look more like the NBC Peacock logo than actual turkeys, so..." Kitty is unfazed, and I take another bite of the green beans. They do taste like an orange pickle. It turns out I have cooked the turkey upside down. Also, Kitty kept hounding me about salmonella because she watched a video on it in Science, so I wind up leaving the bird in too long. The mashed potatoes are fine, but there are some crunchy bits here and there because I rushed to boil them. We are seated around the dining room table, and Kitty's placemats really do add a certain something. Grandma is eating a whole pile of green beans, and I shoot Kitty a triumphant look. See, someone likes them. There was a minute or two after Mommy died when Grandma moved in to help take care of us. There was even talk of her staying. She didn't think Daddy could manage on his own. "So, Danny," Grandma begins. Kitty and I exchange a look across the table because we know what's coming. "Are you seeing anyone these days? Going on dates?" My dad reddens.
Not so much. My work keeps me so busy."
Grandma clucks. "It's not good for a man to be alone, Danny."
"I've got my girls to keep me company," my dad says, trying to sound jovial and not tense.
Grandma fixes him with a cold stare. "That's not what I mean." When we're doing the dishes, Grandma asks me, "Lara Jean, would you mind if your daddy had a girlfriend?" It's something Margot and I have discussed at length over the years, most often in the dark, late at night. If Daddy absolutely had to date, what kind of woman would we like to see him with? Someone with a good sense of humor, kind-hearted, all of the usual things. Someone who'd be firm with Kitty, but not rein her in so much that it would squash all the special things about her. But also, someone who wouldn't try to be our mother. That's what Margot is fiercest about. Kitty needs a mom, but we're old enough to not need mothering, she says. Of the three of us, Margot would be the most critical. She's incredibly loyal to Mommy's memory. Not that I'm not, but there have been times over the years where I've thought how it would be nice to have someone older, a lady, who knows about certain things, like the right way to put on blush or how to flirt to get out of a speeding ticket, things to know for the future. But then it never happened. Daddy's been on some dates, but he hasn't had a steady girlfriend he's brought around, which has always been sort of a relief. But now that I'm getting older, I keep thinking about what it will be like when I'm gone, and it's just Kitty and Daddy, and then before long it will just be Daddy. I don't want him to be alone. "No," I say. "I wouldn't mind at all." Grandma gives me an approving look. "Good girl," she says, and I feel warm and cozy inside, like how I used to feel after a cup of the night-night tea Mommy used to make me when I couldn't fall asleep at night. Daddy's made it for me a few times since, but it never tasted the same, and I never had the heart to tell him.
Chapter 52. The Christmas Cookie Bonanza starts December 1st. We drag out all of Mommy's old cookbooks and cooking magazines, and we spread them out on the living room floor and turn on the Charlie Brown Christmas album.
No Christmas music is allowed in our house until December 1st. I don't remember whose rule this is, but we abide by it. Kitty keeps a list of which cookies we're definitely doing and which ones we're maybe doing. There are a few perennials. My dad loves pecan crescents, so those are a must. Sugar cookies, because those are a given. Snickerdoodles for Kitty. Molasses cookies for Margot. Cowgirl cookies for me. White chocolate cranberry are Josh's favorite. I think this year, though, we should mix things up and do different cookies. Not entirely, but at least a few new ones. Peter's here. He stopped by after school to work on chem, and now it's hours later and he's still here. He and Kitty and I are in the living room going through the cookbooks. My dad's in the kitchen listening to NPR and making tomorrow's lunches. "Please, no more turkey sandwiches," I call out. Peter nudges my sock and mouths, "Spoiled," and he points at me and Kitty, shaking his finger at us. "Whatever. Your mom makes your lunches every day, so shut it," I whisper. My dad calls back, "Hey, I'm sick of leftovers too, but what are we going to do, throw it away?" Kitty and I look at each other. "Pretty much exactly," I say. My dad has a thing about wasting food. I wonder if I snuck down to the kitchen tonight and threw it out if he'd notice. He probably would. "If we had a dog," Kitty pipes up loudly, "there wouldn't be any more leftovers." She winks at me.
"What kind of dog do you want?" Peter asks her.
"Don't get her hopes up," I tell him, but he waves me off. Immediately, Kitty says, "An Akita, red fur with a cinnamon bun tail. Or a German Shepherd I can train to be a seeing eye dog."
"But you're not blind," Peter says.
"But I could be one day." Grinning, Peter shakes his head. He nudges me again, and in an admiring voice, he says,
"Can't argue with the kid."
It's pretty much futile, I agree. I hold up a magazine to show Kitty. "What do you think? Creamsicle cookies?" Kitty writes them down as a maybe.
"Hey, what about these?"
Peter pushes a cookbook in my lap. It's opened up to a fruitcake cookie recipe. I gag. "Are you kidding? You're kidding, right? Fruitcake cookies? That's disgusting."
"When done right, fruitcake can be really good," Peter defends. "My great aunt Trish used to make fruitcake, and she'd put ice cream on top, and it was awesome."
"If you put ice cream on anything, it's good," Kitty says. "Can't argue with the kid," I say, and Peter and I exchange smiles over Kitty's head.
"Point taken, but this isn't your average fruitcake. It's not like a wet loaf of neon jujubes. It's got pecans and dried cherries and blueberries and good stuff. I think she called it Christmas memory fruitcake."
"I love that story," I exclaim. "That's my favorite. It's so good, but so sad." Peter looks puzzled, and so does Kitty, so I explain. "A Christmas Memory is a short story by Truman Capote. It's about a boy named Buddy and his older lady cousin who took care of him when he was little. They'd save up all year to buy ingredients for fruitcake, and then they'd send them as presents to friends, but also to, like, the president."
"Why is it so sad?"
Kitty wants to know. "Because they're best friends and they love each other more than anybody, but they get separated in the end because the family thinks she doesn't take good enough care of him. And maybe she doesn't, but maybe it doesn't matter because she was still his soulmate. In the end, she dies, and Buddy doesn't even get to say goodbye to her. And it's a true story."
"That's depressing," Peter says. "Forget the fruitcake cookies."
Kitty crosses out fruitcake cookies on her pad. I'm thumbing through an old Good Housekeeping magazine when the doorbell rings. Kitty scrambles up and runs for the door. "Check who it is before you open it," I call after her. She's always forgetting to check first.
"Josh!"
I hear her squeal. Peter's head jerks up. "He's here to see Kitty," I tell him.
"Yeah, right."
Josh walks into the living room with Kitty hanging around his neck like a monkey.
"Hey,"
he says, eyes flickering in Peter's direction.
"What's up, man?"
Peter says, friendly as can be.
"Have a seat."
I give him a strange look.
Just a second ago, he was grousing, and now he's happy as a clam. I don't get boys.
Josh holds up a plastic bag.
I brought back your casserole dish.
Is that Josh?
My dad calls from the kitchen.
Josh, do you want a snack? Turkey sandwich?
I'm positive he's going to say no, because I'm sure he's had as many leftover turkey sandwiches over at his house as we've been eating over here. But then he goes,
sure.
Josh disentangles himself from Kitty and plops down on the couch. To me, he says,
Christmas cookie bonanza?
Christmas cookie bonanza, I confirm.
You're making my favorite, right?
Josh gives me puppy dog eyes, which always makes me laugh because it's so un-Josh. You're such a dork, I say, shaking my head.
What's your favorite?
Peter asks him.
Because I think the list is pretty set.
I'm pretty sure it's already on the list, Josh says. I look from Josh to Peter. I can't tell if they're kidding or not. Peter reaches out and tickles Kitty's feet.
Read us the list, Catherine.
Kitty giggles and rolls over to her notepad. Then she stands up and grandly says, M&M cookies are a yes. Cappuccino cookies are a maybe. Creamsicle cookies are a maybe. Fruitcake cookies are a no way.
Wait a minute. I'm part of this council, too, Peter objects. And you guys just turned down my fruitcake cookies without a second thought.
You said to forget the fruitcake cookies like 5 seconds ago, I say.
Well, now I want them back under consideration, he says.
I'm sorry, but you don't have the votes, I tell him. Kitty and I both vote no, so that's 2-1. My dad pops his head into the living room.
Put me down as a yes vote for the fruitcake cookies.
His head disappears back into the kitchen.
Thank you, Dr. Covey, Peter crows.
He drags me closer to him.
See, I knew your dad was on my side.
I laugh.
You're such a suck-up.
And then I look over at Josh, and he is staring at us with a funny, left-out look on his face. It makes me feel bad, that look. I scoot away from Peter and start flipping through my books again. I tell him, the list is still a work in progress. The Cookie Council will strongly consider your white chocolate cranberry cookies.
Greatly appreciated, Josh says. Christmas isn't Christmas without your white chocolate cranberry cookies.
Kitty pipes up.
Hey, Josh, you're a suck-up, too.
Josh grabs her and tickles her until she's laughing so hard she has tears in her eyes. After Josh leaves and Kitty goes upstairs to watch TV, I'm tidying up the living room, and Peter's sprawled out on the couch watching me. I keep thinking he's about to leave, but then he keeps lingering. Out of nowhere, he says,
Remember back at Halloween how you were Cho Chang and Sanderson was Harry Potter?
I bet you that wasn't a coincidence. I bet you $1,000,000 he got Kitty to find out what your costume was, and then he ran out and bought a Harry Potter costume. The kid is into you.
I freeze. No, he isn't. He loves my sister. He always has, and he always will. Peter waves this off.
Just you wait. As soon as you and I are done, he's gonna pull some cheesy-ass move and, like, profess his love for you with a boombox. I'm telling you. I know how guys think.
I yank away the pillow he's got cushioning his back and put it on the recliner. My sister will be home for winter break soon. I bet you $1,000,000 they get back together. Peter holds his hand out for me to shake on it, and when I take it, he pulls me onto the couch next to him. Our legs touch. He has a mischievous glint in his eye, and I think maybe he's going to kiss me. And I'm scared, but I'm excited, too. But then I hear Kitty's footsteps coming down the stairs, and the moment's over. Chapter 53.
Can we put up the tree this weekend?
Kitty asks at breakfast. My dad looks up from his bowl of oatmeal.
Oatmeal. Ugh. I don't see why not.
Half-heartedly, I say, Margot might be mad if we do it without her. Truth be told, I want to put the tree up, too. It's so cozy to do Christmas cookie bonanza and have the lights twinkling on the tree and Christmas music and the whole house smelling like sugar and butter.
Brielle's family put their tree up the day after Thanksgiving, Kitty says.
Let's just do it then, I say. Can we, Daddy?
Well, if Brielle's family is doing it, Daddy says.
We drive out to the Christmas tree farm an hour away, because that's where the really nice ones are. Kitty insists on seeing each and every tree to make sure ours is the best one. I vote for a plump balsam fir because it smells the best, but Kitty doesn't think it's tall enough. We go for a Douglas fir instead, and the whole drive home, the air smells like Christmas morning. Josh runs out of his house when he sees us struggling to get the tree inside. He and my dad heft it up and take it inside the house. He holds the tree up straight as my dad screws the Christmas tree stand around it tight. I have a feeling like he's going to want to stay and help decorate the tree. I can't stop thinking about what Peter said, how Josh could maybe like me.
A little to the left, Kitty directs. It's not straight enough.
I bring down the box with the twinkle lights and the ornaments and start sorting through them. My favorite is the painted blue star I made in kindergarten out of dough. It's my favorite because there's a bite taken out of it. I told Kitty it was a cookie, and she chomped right into it like the Cookie Monster. And then she cried, and I got in trouble. But it was worth it.
Should we do colored lights or white lights this year? I ask. White, Kitty says. It's classier.
But colored lights are whimsical, Josh argues. I mean, they're nostalgic. I roll my eyes.
Whimsical, Josh?
And then Josh proceeds to make a case for colored lights, and he and I argue back and forth until Daddy intercedes and says we should just do half and half. This is when things finally feel really and truly normal between us, now that we're bickering again like old times. Peter was wrong about Josh. The tree is so tall it nearly touches the ceiling. We run out of lights, so Daddy goes to buy more at the store. Josh puts Kitty on his shoulder so she can put the star on the tippy top. I'm glad we got a big tree this year, I say with a happy sigh, falling back onto the sofa and looking up at the top. There's nothing cozier than a Christmas tree all lit up. A little later, Daddy has to go into the hospital, and Kitty goes over to our neighbor's house because they're making s'mores in the fireplace. So it's just Josh and me cleaning up. I'm putting ornament hooks back into their different Ziploc bags, and Josh is loading up a cardboard box with the ornaments we didn't have room for. He hoists the box in his arms and bumps into a branch on the tree, and a glass ornament slips off and breaks. Josh groans.
Josh, I say, I made that in home ec.
Sorry. It's okay. It wasn't my best work anyway. I put in too many feathers. It's a clear glass ball with white feathers and white sequins inside. I go get a broom, and when I come back, he says, "You act different around Kavinsky. Did you know that?" I look up from sweeping the broken ornament. "No, I don't." "You don't act like you. You act like how all girls act around him. That's not you, Lara Jean." Annoyed, I say, "I act the same as I always do. What would you know about it, Josh? You've barely ever even been around us." I crouch down and pick up a shard of glass. "Be careful," Josh says. "Here, I'll do it." He stoops down next to me and reaches for another shard. "Ow!"
"You be careful."
I lean close to him and try to get a closer look at his finger. "Are you bleeding?" He shakes his head. "I'm fine." And then he says, "You know what I don't get?"
"What?"
Josh stares at me, his cheeks a dull red.
"Why you never said anything? If all that time you felt like that about me, why didn't you say anything?"
My whole body goes stiff. I wasn't expecting that. I'm not prepared. I swallow hard and say, "You were with Margot."
"I wasn't always with Margot. The stuff you wrote, you liked me before I ever liked her. Why didn't you just tell me?"
I let out a breath. What does it even matter now?
It matters. You should have told me. You should have at least given me a chance.
It wouldn't have made a difference, Josh.
And I'm telling you it would have.
He steps toward me. Jerkily, I rise to my feet.
Why is he bringing this up now, just when things are back to normal again?
You're so full of it. You've never thought of me that way, not ever, so don't go trying to reinvent history now when I have somebody.
Don't tell me what I think, he snaps. You don't know my every thought, Lara Jean.
Yes, I do. I know you better than anyone. You know why? You're predictable. Everything you do, it's so predictable. The only reason you're even saying this now is because you're jealous. And it's not even because of me. You don't care about who I'm with. You're just jealous that Peter took your spot. Kitty likes him better than you now, too.
His face darkens. He glares at me, and I glare back.
Fine, he yells. I'm jealous. Are you happy now?
And then he jerks his head toward mine, and he kisses me.
On the lips.
His eyes are closed. Mine are wide open. And then mine closed, too. And for a second, just for a second, I kiss him back. Then I break away. I push him off.
Triumphantly, he says, Did you predict that, Lara Jean?
My mouth opens and closes, but no words come out. I drop the broom and run up the stairs as fast as I can. I run all the way to my room and lock my door behind me.
Josh just kissed me.
In my living room. My sister is coming back in a few weeks. And I have a fake boyfriend I just cheated on.
Chapter 54. After third period, Lucas is waiting for me. He's wearing a skinny tie today with a V-neck, and he has a full-size bag of Cheetos in his hand. He stuffs a handful of Cheetos into his mouth, and orange dust floats onto his white V-neck. The corners of his mouth look slightly orange, too. With his mouth full, he says, Look, there's something I need to tell you. I laugh. I can't believe I ever thought you were so refined, I say, blowing Cheetos powder off his shirt.
What do you need to tell me? I ask. I steal a few Cheetos out of the bag.
When he hesitates, I say, Lucas, I hate when people say that they have something to tell you and then they don't just say it. It's like when people say they have a funny story. Like, just hurry up and tell the story and I'll decide for myself if I think it's funny or not.
Lucas licks cheese off his lips.
Well, you know how I live in the same neighborhood as Genevieve, right?
I nod.
Last night, I saw Kavinsky leaving her house.
Oh, that's all I say, just, oh.
Normally, I wouldn't think it was that big of a deal, but there's one other thing.
Lucas wipes his mouth off with the back of his hand.
Genevieve and her college guy broke up over the weekend. You know what that means, right?
I'm nodding, but I'm numb inside.
Yes.
Wait, what?
Lucas gives me a look that's half pitying, half impatient.
She's going to try to get Peter back, Lara Jean.
Right, I say, and I feel a pang even as I'm saying it.
Of course she will.
Don't let her, he warns.
I won't, I say,
and the words come out soft like jelly without any conviction at all. I didn't know it until now, but I think maybe I've been counting down to this moment all along. For Genevieve to want Peter back. For Peter to figure out this whole thing has been a zany little detour, and now it's time for him to go back where he belongs, to the person he belongs to.
I wasn't planning on telling Peter a thing about Josh kissing me. I really wasn't. But then, as Lucas and I are walking together, I see him and Genevieve walking down the hallway. Lucas gives me a meaningful look, which I pretend not to see. In chemistry class, I write Peter a note. You were right about Josh. I tap him on the back and slip the note into his hand. When he reads it, he sits up straight and immediately scrawls something back. Be more specific. He kissed me. When Peter stiffens, I'm ashamed to say that I feel a little bit vindicated. I wait for him to write back, but he doesn't. As soon as the bell rings, he turns around and says,
What the hell? How did that even happen?
He came over to help us trim the tree.
And then what? He kissed you in front of Kitty?
No, it was just the two of us at the house. Peter looks really irritated, and I'm starting to regret mentioning it.
What the hell was he thinking? Kissing my girlfriend? It's fucking ridiculous. I'm gonna say something to him.
Wait, what? No!
I have to, Lara Jean. He can't just get away with it.
I stand up and start packing up my bag. You'd better not say anything to him, Peter. I mean it.
Peter watches me silently, and then he asks,
Did you kiss him back?
What does it matter?
He looks taken aback.
Are you mad at me for something?
No, I say. But I will be if you say anything to Josh.
Fine, he says.
Fine, I say back. Chapter 55. I haven't seen Josh since he kissed me, but when I get home that night from studying at the library, he is sitting on the front porch in his navy parka, waiting for me. The lights are on in the house. My dad is home. Kitty's bedroom light is on. I'd rather go on avoiding Josh, but here he is, at my house.
Hey, he says. Can I talk to you?
I sit down next to him and look straight ahead, across the street. Ms. Rothschild's put her Christmas tree up, too. She always puts it by the window near the door so people can see it from the outside.
We have to figure out what we're going to do before Margot gets here. It was my fault what happened. I should be the one to tell her.
I stare at him in disbelief.
Tell her? Are you nuts? We're never telling Margot because there's nothing to tell.
He juts his chin out.
I don't want to keep a secret from her.
Well, you should have thought of that before you kissed me, I hiss. And for the record, if anybody was going to tell her, it would be me. I'm her sister. You were just her boyfriend, and you're not even that anymore, so...
Hurt flashes across his face, and it stays there.
I was never just Margot's boyfriend. This is weird for me, too, you know. It's like, ever since I got that letter...
He hesitates.
Forget it.
Just say it, I say.
Ever since I got that letter, things have been messed up between us. It's not fair. You got to say everything you wanted to say, and I'm the one who has to rearrange the way I think about you. I have to make sense of it in my head. You totally blindsided me, and then you just shut me out. You started dating Kavinsky. You stopped being my friend.
He exhales.
Ever since I got your letter, I haven't been able to stop thinking about you.
Whatever I was expecting him to say, it wasn't that. It definitely wasn't that.
Josh,
I know you don't want to hear it, but just let me say what I need to say, okay?
I nod.
I hate that you're with Kavinsky. I hate it. He's not good enough for you. I'm sorry to say it, but he's just not. In my opinion, no guy will ever be good enough for you. Least of all me.
Josh ducks his head, and then suddenly he looks up at me and says,
There was this one time... I guess it was a couple of summers ago. We were walking home from somebody's house. I think it was Mike's.
It was hot, around dusk. I was mad because Mike's older brother Jimmy had said he'd give us a ride home, and then he went somewhere and didn't come back, so we had to walk. I was wearing espadrilles, and my feet were hurting something terrible. Josh kept telling me to keep up with him. Quietly, he says,
It was just me and you. You had on that tan suede fringy shirt you used to wear, with the straps, and it showed your belly button.
My Pocahontas meets 70s Cher style shirt. Oh, how I loved that shirt.
I almost kissed you that day. I thought about it. It was this weird impulse I had. I just wanted to see what it would be like.
My heart stops. And then?
And then... I don't know. I guess I forgot about it.
I let out a sigh. I'm sorry you got that letter. You were never supposed to see that. It wasn't meant for you to ever read. It was just for me.
Maybe it was fate. Maybe this was all supposed to happen just like this because it was always going to be you and me.
I say the first thing that comes to mind. No, it wasn't. And I realize it's true.
This is the moment I realize I don't love him. That I haven't for a while. That maybe I never did. Because he's right there for the taking. I could kiss him again. I could make him mine. But I don't want him. I want someone else. It feels strange to have spent so much time wishing for something, for someone, and then one day suddenly to just stop. I tuck my fingers inside my jacket sleeves. You can't tell Margot. You have to promise me, Josh. Reluctantly, he nods. Has Margot been in touch with you recently? I ask him.
Yeah, she called the other night. She said she wants to hang out while she's home. She wants to go to D.C. for the day. Go to the Smithsonian, get dinner in Chinatown.
Great. Then that's what you'll do. I pat him on the knee and then quickly take my hand back. Josh, we just have to act like before. Like always. If we do that, everything will be fine. I repeat it to myself in my head. Everything will be fine. We'll all go back to our proper places now. Josh and Margot. Me. Peter. Chapter 56. After school lets out the next day, I go look for Peter in the weight room. He's sitting at the bench press. I think it's better to talk here and not in his car. I'm going to miss riding around in his car. It was starting to feel like home. I'm going to miss being somebody's pretend girlfriend. Not just somebody's. Peter's. I've gotten to really like Darrell and Gabe and the other lacrosse guys. They aren't as douchey as people say. They're good people. The weight room is empty except for Peter. He's at the bench press lifting weights. When he sees me, he smiles.
Are you here to spot me?
He sits up and wipes sweat off his face with the collar of his t-shirt. My heart squeezes painfully. I'm here to break up. To fake break up, I mean. Peter does a double take.
Wait, what?
There's no need to keep it going. You got what you wanted, right? You saved face, and so did I. I talked to Josh, and everything's back to normal with us again, and my sister will be home soon, so mission accomplished. Slowly, he nods.
Yeah, I guess.
My heart is breaking even as I smile. So, okay then. With a flourish, I whip our contract out of my bag. Null and void. Both parties have hereby fulfilled their obligations to each other in perpetuity. I'm just rattling off lawyer words.
You carry that around with you?
Of course. Kitty's such a snoop. She'd find it in 2 seconds. I hold up the piece of paper, poised to rip it in half, but Peter grabs it from me.
Wait. What about the ski trip?
What about it?
You're still coming, right?
I hadn't thought of that. The only reason I was going to go was for Peter. I can't go now. I can't be a witness to Peter and Genevieve's reunion. I just can't. I want them to come back from the trip magically together again, and it will be like this whole thing was just something I dreamed up. I'm not going to go. His eyes widen.
Come on, Covey, don't bail on me now. We already signed up and gave the deposits and everything. Let's just go and have that be our final hurrah.
When I start to protest, Peter shakes his head.
You're going, so take this contract back.
Peter refolds it and carefully puts it back in my bag. Why is it so hard to say no to him? Is this what it's like to be in love with somebody? Chapter 57. I get the idea during the morning announcements when they announce that our school's hosting a model UN scrimmage this weekend. John Ambrose McLaren was the middle school model UN president. I wonder if he's on his school's team. I bring it up to Peter at lunch, before any of the guys sit down. Do you know if John McLaren still does model UN? He gives me a funny look.
How should I know?
I don't know, I was just wondering.
Why?
I think maybe I'm going to do the Model UN scrimmage this weekend. I have a feeling that'll be there.
For real?
Peter hoots.
If he is, what are you going to do?
I haven't figured that part out yet. Maybe I'll go up to him, maybe I won't. I just want to see how he turned out.
We can look him up online right now and I'll show you.
I shake my head. No, that would be cheating. I want to see him with my own eyes. I want to be surprised.
Well, don't bother asking me to go and keep you company. I'm not going to waste a whole Saturday on Model UN.
I wasn't planning on asking you to go. Peter throws me a hurt look.
What? Why not?
It's just something I want to do by myself. Peter lets out a low whistle.
Wow, the body ain't even cold yet.
Huh?
You're a little player, Covey. We aren't even broken up yet, and you're already trying to talk to other guys. I would be hurt if I wasn't impressed.
This makes me smile. In eighth grade, I kissed John McLaren at a party. It wasn't a romantic kiss. It was a barely anything kiss. We were playing spin the bottle, and when it was his turn, I held my breath and prayed the bottle would land on me. And it did. It almost landed on Angie Powell, but luck was on my side that day, and he was mine by half an inch. I tried to keep my face very still and robotic so I wouldn't smile. John and I crawled into the center, and we did this very quick chicken peck, and everybody groaned and his face was red. I was disappointed. I think maybe I'd expected something more. A kiss with more weight to it. More va-va-va-voom. More za-za-zoo. But that was it. Maybe I'll get a second chance. Maybe it'll make me forget Peter. Chapter 58. As I walk into school on Saturday morning, I go over what I'm going to say. Maybe just, hey, John, how are you? It's Lara Jean. I haven't seen him since the eighth grade. What if he doesn't recognize me? What if he doesn't even remember me? I scan the sandwich boards in the lobby, and I find John's name under General Assembly. He's representing the People's Republic of China. The General Assembly is meeting in the auditorium. There are desks set up for each delegate, and on stage there's a podium where a girl in a black suit is making a speech about nuclear nonproliferation. I'm thinking I'll just slip in the back and sit and watch, but there's nowhere to sit, so I just stand at the back of the room with my arms crossed and look for John. There are so many people here, and everybody's facing front, so it's hard to tell what's what. A kid in a navy suit turns around and looks at me and whispers, "Are you a page?" He's holding up a folded piece of paper. I'm not sure what a page is. And then I see a girl hustling around the room, delivering notes to people. The boy thrusts the piece of paper at me and turns back around and scribbles in his notebook. The note is addressed to Brazil from France. So I guess I'm a page. The tables aren't in alphabetical order, so I just start wandering around trying to find Brazil. I finally find Brazil, a guy in a bow tie, and other people are raising their hands with notes for me to deliver. Before long, I'm hustling too. From behind, I see a boy's hand raised for me to pick up his note, so I hurry forward, and then he turns his head just slightly, and, oh my God, it's John Ambrose McLaren, delegate from the People's Republic of China, a few feet away from me. He has sandy hair, clean cut. His cheeks are rosy, just the way I remember. They still have that fresh, scrubbed wholesomeness that makes him look young. He's wearing khakis and a light blue button-down with a navy crewneck sweater. He looks serious, focused, like he's a real delegate and this isn't pretend. Honestly, he looks just the way I imagined he'd grow up to look. John's holding the piece of paper out for me as he takes notes with his head down. I reach for it. My fingers close around the paper, and then he looks up and does a double take. "Hi," I whisper. We're both still holding on to the note.
"Hi,"
he says back. He blinks, and then he lets go of the paper, and I hurry away, my heart pounding in my ears. I hear him call out my name in a loud whisper, but I don't slow down. I look down at the paper. His handwriting is neat, precise. I go deliver his note to the USA, and then I ignore Great Britain, who is waving a note at me, and I walk right out the auditorium double doors and into the afternoon light.
I just saw John McLaren. After all these years, I finally saw him. And he knew me. Right away, he knew who I was. I get a text from Peter around lunchtime. Did you see McLaren? I type back yes, but then I delete it before I hit send. I write back no instead. I'm not sure why I do it. I think maybe I just want to keep it for myself and be happy just knowing that John remembered me and have that be enough. Chapter 59. We all go to pick up Margo from the airport. Kitty's made a sign that says, "Welcome home, Go-Go." I keep my eyes peeled for her, and when she comes out, I almost don't recognize her for a second. Her hair is short. It's cut in a bob. When Margo sees us, she waves, and Kitty drops her sign and runs toward her. Then we're all hugging, and Daddy has tears in his eyes. "What do you think?" Margo says to me, and I know she means her hair. "It makes you look older." I lie, and Margo beams. If anything, it makes her look younger, but I knew she wouldn't want to hear that. On the way home, Margo makes Daddy pull over at Clouds for a cheeseburger, even though she says she isn't hungry. "I've missed this so much," she says, but she only has a few bites, and Kitty has the rest. I'm excited to show Margo all the cookies we made, but when I take her into the dining room and show her all the tins, she frowns. "You guys did the Christmas cookie bonanza without me?" I feel a little bit guilty, but I honestly didn't think Margo would mind. I mean, she was in Scotland doing way more fun stuff than baking cookies, for Pete's sake. "Well, yeah, we kind of had to. School ends tomorrow. If we'd waited for you, we wouldn't have had time. We saved half the dough in the freezer, though, so you can still help us bake the rest for the neighbors." I open the big blue tin so she can see the cookies layered and lined up in rows. I'm proud of how they are the same size and height. "We did some new cookies this year. Try an orange creamsicle. It's really good." Margo picks through the tins and frowns. "You didn't do molasses cookies?" "Not this year. We decided to do orange creamsicle cookies in their place." She picks one up and I watch her bite into it. "Good, right?" She nods. "Mm-hmm." "Those were Kitty's pick." Margo glances toward the living room. "When did you guys do the tree?" "Kitty couldn't wait," I say, and it sounds like an excuse, but it's true. I try not to sound defensive as I add, "I think it'll be nice to enjoy the tree for as long as we can." "So when did you put it up?" Slowly I say, "A couple of weeks ago." Why is she in such a bad mood? "That's so long ago. It'll probably be dried out by Christmas Day." Margo walks over to the tree and moves the wooden owl ornament to a different branch. "I've been watering it every day and putting in Sprite like Grandma taught us. Somehow this feels like a fight, and we never fight." But then Margo yawns and says, "I'm really jet-lagged. I think I'm going to take a nap." When someone's been gone a long time, at first you save up all the things you want to tell them. You try to keep track of everything in your head, but it's like trying to hold on to a fistful of sand. All the little bits slip out of your hands, and then you're just clutching air and grit. That's why you can't save it all up like that. Because by the time you finally see each other, you're catching up only on the big things, because it's too much bother to tell about the little things. But the little things are what make up life. Like a month ago when Daddy slipped on a banana peel. A literal banana peel that Kitty had dropped on the kitchen floor. Kitty and I laughed for ages. I should have emailed Margo about it right away. I should have taken a picture of the banana peel. Now everything feels like you had to be there, and oh, never mind, I guess it's not that funny. Is this how people lose touch? I didn't think that could happen with sisters. Maybe with other people, but never us. Before Margo left, I knew what she was thinking without having to ask. I knew everything about her. Not anymore. I don't know what the view looks like outside her window, or if she still wakes up early every morning to have a real breakfast, or if maybe now that she's at college, she likes to go out late and sleep in late. I don't know if she prefers Scottish boys to American boys now,
or if her roommate snores. All I know is she likes her classes, and she's been to visit London once. So basically I know nothing. And so does she. There are big things I haven't told her. How my letters got sent out. The truth about me and Peter. The truth about me and Josh. I wonder if Margot feels it too. The distance between us. If she even notices.
Daddy makes spaghetti bolognese for dinner. Kitty has hers with a big pickle and a glass of milk, which sounds terrible, but then I take a bite, and actually, pickle and spaghetti taste good together. Milk, too. Kitty's dumping more noodles on her plate when she says, "Lara Jean, what are you going to get Peter for Christmas?" I glance at Margot, who is looking at me.
"I don't know. I hadn't thought about it."
"Can I go with you to pick it out?"
"Sure, if I get him something."
"You have to get him something. He's your boyfriend."
"I still can't believe you're dating Peter Kavinsky," Margot says. She doesn't say it in a nice way, like it's a good thing. "Can you just not?" I say. "I'm sorry, I just don't like the guy."
"Well, you don't have to like him. I do," I say, and Margot shrugs. Daddy stands up and claps his hands together.
"We have three different kinds of ice cream for dessert. Pralines and cream, Chunky Monkey, and Strawberry. All your favorites, Margot. Help me get the bowls, Kitty."
They gather up the dirty dishes and go into the kitchen. Margot looks out the window toward Josh's house. "Josh wants to see me later. I hope he finally gets that we're broken up and he doesn't try to come over every day while I'm home. He needs to move on." What a mean thing to say. She's the one who's been calling Josh, not the other way around.
"He hasn't been pining for you, if that's what you're imagining," I say. "He gets that it's over."
Margot stares at me in surprise. "Well, I hope that's true." Chapter 60. "I think we should do recital party this year," Margot says from her spot on the couch. "When my mom was alive, every Christmas we'd have what she called a recital party. She'd make tons of food and invite people over one night in December, and Margot and I would wear matching dresses and play Christmas carols on the piano all night. People would drift in and out of the piano room and sing along, and Margot and I would take turns playing. I hated real piano recitals because I was the worst in my age group and Margot was the best. It was humiliating to have to play some easy Fiorellisa while the other kids had already moved on to Liszt. I always hated recital party. I used to beg and beg not to have to play. The last Christmas, Mommy bought us matching red velvet dresses to wear, and I threw a fit and said I didn't want to wear it, even though I did, even though I loved it. I just didn't want to have to play piano in it next to Margot. I screamed at her and I ran to my room and slammed the door and I wouldn't come out. Mommy came up and tried to get me to open the door, but I wouldn't, and she didn't come back. People started arriving and Margot started playing the piano and I stayed upstairs. I sat in my room crying and thinking about all the dips and the little canapes Mommy and Daddy had made and how there would be none left for me and how Mommy probably didn't even want me down there anyway after the way I'd behaved. After Mommy died, we never had another recital party."
"Are you serious?" I ask her.
"Why not?" Margot shrugs. "It'll be fun. I'll plan it all. You won't have to do anything."
"You know I hate piano."
"Then don't play." Kitty's looking from me to Margot with worried eyes. Biting her lip, she offers,
"I'll do some taekwondo moves."
Margot reaches out and cuddles Kitty to her and says, "That's a great idea. I'll play the piano, and you'll do taekwondo, and Lara Jean will just..."
"Watch," I finish.
I was going to say hostess, but suit yourself. I don't answer her. Later, we're watching TV and Kitty's asleep, curled up on the couch like she's a real cat. Margot wants to wake her up and make her go to her bed, but I say just let her sleep, and I put a quilt over her.
"Will you help me work on Daddy about a puppy for Christmas?" I ask.
Margot groans. "Puppies are so much work. You have to let them out to pee like a million times a day. And they shed like crazy.
You'll never be able to wear black pants again. Also, who's going to walk it and feed it and take care of it?
Kitty will, and I'll help.
Kitty is so not ready for the responsibility. Her eyes say,